Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and look who's here but our own On the Media host, Bob Garfield, and Doug Levy, co-authors of their new book, Can't Buy Me Like. Doug is CEO of the company Me Plus You, a leading creative and strategic agency. So, hi, Bob, and Doug Levy, welcome to WNYC.
Well, thanks. Good to be with you, Brian.
So, Bob, your thesis in a nutshell is that a 300-year era of mass market advertising is ending and the relationship era is being born. What's the relationship era?
The relationship era is what happens when various forces of the universe converge. The disintegration of mass media and mass marketing, caused mainly by the digital revolution, is one. Total transparency of all institutions, including brands and companies, because nobody is hidden behind a fortress anymore. Everyone's living in a glass house, so we know everything about every company and every brand. The third force is social media, in which we stop paying attention to what companies and brands had to say about themselves, because who cares? And we are talking among ourselves about all of these third parties, and that's how we form our conclusions. And fourth, maybe because of all of the above, and maybe not, but in any case, this all happens at a time in the history of society when, for whatever reason, people care more about a brand's values and its behavior, conduct, and so forth, than it does even about the goods and services themselves. So you put those all together and you've eradicated brands' abilities to massage and manipulate and persuade, and you've forced them into a world where they have to actually relate like living human beings with other human beings. And that's what the book's about.
Doug, where do you think we are in the development of this trajectory? Because we've been having some version of this conversation, I'd say, since the mid-1990s when the modern internet came on the scene, that, you know, we're moving from a mass market to an individual market kind of world. Consumers have more power, more individual choice. So what's new in 2013?
This is a conversation that's been going on a while, and there's some companies that have been using relationship era approaches to marketing for quite some time, quite successfully. But we're not yet at tipping point. Still, the majority of American businesses think of trust as just another way to garner transaction. And they show up in the way they make decisions at work in a way that's very different from the way human beings actually relate to each other. So I don't think we've yet reached the tipping point, but we certainly have some good examples to point to of companies that are succeeding because of their approach to business that maps to the relationship era.
And we'll go through some positive examples and negative examples in the minute. Patagonia, Krispy Kreme, Citibank on your plus side, McDonald's and some others on the negative side. But Bob, allow me to be skeptical of the premise for a minute. I'm not completely convinced that I have a relationship with the companies that I buy from. I have a relationship with my friends and relatives. I have a relationship with my coworkers, including you, for the last 12 years. I hope I have a relationship with my listeners. But I don't have a relationship with Macy's because I buy clothing there sometimes, do I?
You think you don't, maybe. But you care about Macy's. If you find out that that Macy's has done something that upsets you, you know, I don't know, let's just say, inequity in its pay scales for men and women, or has something in its supply chain where they're knowingly using child labor on their merchandise. All of a sudden, you do have a relationship with them, and it's poor. If, conversely, you think that Macy's has a point of view as a retailer, that it's doing something that impresses you, that whether it's something as mundane as fantastic customer service, which, by the way, certainly isn't true, or something it's doing with its employees, it's very progressive, or some decisions it's made about not closing stores because it would have too much of an impact on a neighborhood, or some such thing. If you like the brand, yeah, you also have a relationship with them. In any event, you're not paying attention to the Macy's ads because you're DVRing past them and you've got a spam filter on your computer. And in terms of the connection between you and Macy's, That relationship, however meager, is all you have. And furthermore, people actually do. I mean, it's kind of hard to get your head around this idea, but people do and care deeply about brands, even though they aren't themselves flesh and blood.
So, Doug, another example. I love my iPad. I'm never without my iPad. But I'm not convinced that I have a relationship with Apple. I just own a good product that they make. And I understand what you both are saying about being tuned into their place in the world. You know, the App Store is easy to use. It gives me pretty straightforward information. Good. I don't like how they treat the factory workers who make iPads, according to all the reporting about that. Bad, but I grudgingly accept it enough to buy the product. And that's a judgment on my part, a calculation. I don't know if it's a relationship. But how much power, Doug, do you argue that consumers are really choosing to exercise on these good citizen kinds of premises? When you look at all the bad activity that's going on in the world by so many corporations that people continue to patronize, whether it's environmental, labor standards, or anything else, is it really a transformational factor?
Well, what we know is that trust in personal recommendations, what your friends say, what people who you trust say, is 92% and growing, according to Nielsen. And conversely, people don't trust what companies say. Trust in advertising is 29% to 47% and shrinking. So what people are paying attention to is what their friends say. And now, because of social media, the megaphone that people have to talk about both their positive and negative experiences is an enormous one. What we also know in the relationship here is that, look, you mentioned Apple. Not everybody likes Apple or loves Apple, but they've got enough people who are passionate about them, who deeply love them, that they're able to have an incredibly strong business. And I think there's something to learn there. They care about something. They certainly care about making money, and they make a ton of money. And at the same time, they care about something bigger than making money. I think they care about user design, the experience that people have in using their products. And if you look at the numbers over a 10-year period, their stocks outperform competitors like Microsoft and Dell and HP by 6,000%. And you can look at some other companies. Whole Foods cares about organic food and healthy eating. They've had annual comp store sales growth of 8% for 30 years. And Southwest Airlines cares about giving people the freedom to fly, and they've made money quarter after quarter while their competitors are declaring bankruptcy. These are companies, again, that care deeply about making money, and they care about something bigger. They have some people who don't really like them, but they've got enough people who love them. And what we see in the relationship era is that those people who love them have a megaphone, much like the people who detest companies.
My guest on WNYC, Bob Garfield, co-host of On the Media, and Doug Levy, CEO of the creative agency Me Plus You, and they are co-authors now of Can't Buy Me Like, How Authentic Customer Connections Drive Superior Results. And you've got success stories and failures in the book. On the success side, Patagonia, Krispy Kreme, Citibank, God help us. You mentioned Whole Foods.
Yeah, be careful how you toss around the Citibank. We have not declared that a success. We just said that they're doing their very best with the hand that they've dealt themselves.
It was about some consumer survey that they took in 2011, trying to listen, right? That was just before they raised the fees on their checking accounts. But maybe we'll look past that one. And I'm actually curious, because you gave a good example just now, Doug, about Whole Foods and why that fits in. Let's look at a couple on the minus side. You list McDonald's, United Airlines, Progressive Insurance, Despite Flo. Pick any one of those.
Bob, hey, can we talk about United?
Sure. Bob, go ahead.
United Airlines has spent $1 billion over 25 years, actually in excess of $1 billion, playing Rhapsody in Blue. And trying to make us all think of blue skies and soaring, rhapsodic experiences in the air, right? If there is a single person in the listening area of WNYC who connects United Airlines with anything rhapsodic, I would like to hear from him or her, because I don't think that person exists. Everyone has feelings about United Airlines, and almost everyone's are bad because of the actual experience of being on United Airlines. $1 billion-plus worth of advertising over a quarter of a century, that's many people's entire lifetimes, has done zero to inform our view about that company. Now, advertising works. Both Doug and I have devoted most of our adult lives to the study and, in Doug's case, the practice of advertising. We don't hate it. We actually rather admire it in many ways. But its primacy in the commercial ecosystem is just – it's waning.
Because word gets around about the actual experience.
Have you ever seen United Breaks Guitars? It's a video by a Canadian band called Sons of Maxwell. And this guy was sitting on a plane and with the rest of his band, and he was looking outside on the tarmac, and there was the United ground crew throwing his Taylor guitar worth, you know, a couple thousand dollars onto a cart and as it turns out, smashing it.
Ouch.
And he tried to get satisfaction and failed. And he did a song and video about it, and it went crazy on the internet.
And yet, how much does it? How much would you say it actually affects? And this is a serious question: the airline's bottom line. Because I will disclose that I'm about to fly United next week to go on vacation because they had the most convenient flight times for where I'm going at a competitive price. So, would I rather fly JetBlue and have that experience? Yes, but I chose United because it was going to be the most convenient and affordable. Some other airline will break somebody's guitar next time some luggage agent has a bad day because they're just all airline companies. No?
There's some truth in what you say. We make some of our decisions rationally. We make some of them based on financial self-interest. What I'm telling you, though, is that the survey data and the economic metrics of relationship era type companies demonstrate that more and more people are making their decisions about brands and purchases based not just on what happens to be convenient or cheap at the moment, but on larger issues. And the companies that behave in a relationship era fashion prosper more across every metric: sales, profitability, lower promotional rates. They just do better.
Before you guys go, Bob, you say you're the Sam Spade of this book and Doug is the Deepak Chopra. That sounds like a good buddy flick. Why those characters?
Doug, go ahead.
Well, Bob and I think, have a shared interest in marketing and where it's headed. And as you noted, we come at this from different places. Bob has really made a career of looking at advertising and deconstructing it and understanding it critically. I've made a career out of helping companies to be successful in this new genre. And so I think the different experiences and personalities that we have come together very well to form this book.
Yeah, I'm on a book tour. He's on a freaking journey. But together, I think we've cracked the code.
I'll get a couple of quick calls in here for you. Susan in Brooklyn,
great.
You're on WNYC with Bob Garfield and Doug Levy, yeah. Authors of Can't Buy Me Like. Go ahead,
yeah,
Susan.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that this personal relationship applies very much when you're dealing with smaller stores and smaller companies, from things like Angie's List and Service Magic. And I find that when I develop a relationship with a store, they're willing to do all sorts of things to me, like let me take out two pairs of something without paying yet, to have somebody who can't get to the store try on. And I certainly have a personal relationship with the head of the small construction company that's putting some new doors on a house we own.
I'll bet you do.
Part of the benefit of the internet was certainly the things like Angie's List and its related things that let you hear what a lot of people think about a company instead of just one friend who may have different things in terms of a recommendation. And we've mm-hmm. been very pleased with
right.
this.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to go right on to John in Paramus. Hi, John.
Well, I can tell you a million stories about United because I deal with them in work. The problem with United is they have a stranglehold on this area since the merger with Continental. And so if you want to fly anywhere at a Newark, especially Newark Airport, you have to use Continental United because they have all the routes.
That's why they had all those flight times every day to Tampa.
And they're the most expensive out of Newark. I know people who travel to LaGuardia and Kennedy from New Jersey because the rates are so cheap, especially business people, because the rates are outlandish, but they own all the routes. And it's only going to get worse.
John, thank you for that. I can offer that in the book. We talk about that relationship that you might have with United, where you're spending money with them, but you don't particularly like them. We call that a reluctant relationship. And what we see is that from the company's perspective, there's some major downsides to being in a reluctant relationship. But a lot of companies are there. They've got people buying from them, but the level of trust is pretty low. Mm-hmm. We talk about three downsides. You've got greater risk. You know, if another airline popped up that had convenient routes, you would jump ship pretty quick. But also, and that's maybe the intuitive one to others, is that those companies may be generating less revenue because they're having to discount in order to attract you, and their costs tend to be higher because they're fighting this ever-stronger current of public sentiment by having to spend lots of money on paid media to attract new customers. So maybe not as much for monopolist companies, but those that are in a competitive environment that have a reluctant relationship may be paying a significant cost for that.
Give me one more contrast from your book, just for the fun of it, because our listeners will love to hate both these companies. McDonald's as somewhat of a failure in this new environment. Of course, it's hard to call them a failure, I'm sure, in business terms, but in the ways that you're defining it, versus Chick-fil-A, which our listeners will love to hate because of some of their politics. But why did you contrast those two, Bob? Give us the last minute on that.
Well, Chick-fil-A, I'm not a big fan of any company that is so associated with bigotry against gays. I mean, I think they made fools of themselves and paid the penalty for it. But you know, they have a point of view as a company, and they live it in every single thing they do, from the C-suite to the front counter to the loading dock to the deep fryer, and it informs everything they do. And their service is phenomenal. All of their employees have internalized the idea of making every routine Chick-fil-A purchasing experience not routine, and as a consequence, they have developed almost cult-like following, much like Apple. Again, when they behaved poorly, they paid for it. But in general, they have a purpose, and they cleave to that purpose in everything they do. McDonald's is doing poorly for obvious political reasons. I mean, they're right in the middle of the national debate about obesity. But they have said, hey, there's this social media thing. We're going to take this social media thing and treat it as just another advertising channel. Well, social media, you know, you got to ignore the word media and pay attention to the word social. Anyone who treats Twitter and Facebook and you name it, Instagram, Pinterest, like just another advertising channel, entirely misses the point. And they did in such a big way when they solicited stories from McDonald's on Twitter, and they thought they were going to get all these heartwarming tales of, you know, couples meeting for the first time in McDonald's. And instead, what did they get? They got a lot of stories about people finding, you know, used Band-Aids in their food. And they're so misunderstood how to cultivate relationships that they just made a colossal blunder.
Supersize my Band-Aid. Bob Garfield and Doug Levy, authors of Can't Buy Me Like How Authentic Customer Connections Drive Superior Results. And guys, I got to go because I got to go look for 3.1416 ways to celebrate Pi Day. So thanks for coming on.
Enjoyed the conversation,
right, thank
Brian.
You,
thanks
Brian.
So much.